Yumadaf Lamed Vav. We are on the Mishnah on Lamed Hamed Beis. We are starting with the Mishnah. Continuation of a description of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. It's already been established back on Daf Lamed Beis that there are going to be five times the Kohen Gadol is going to be going to the mikvah on Yom Kippur with a change of wardrobe. The first of them is going to be into his big day Zahav, where he's going to be doing the Tamid Shel Shachar. And then afterwards, he's going to be toveling in the mikvah, doing a wardrobe change, going into his big day lavan for the first of two times over the course of Yom Kippur. Previous Mishnah already described how he's going to be dressing in the big day lavan in order to get ready to do the majority of the avodas associated with Yom Kippur. Mm-hmm. And the Mishnah now, after he has donned the white linen, the Mishnah here is going to be giving a description of what precisely is going to be done. We're going to go step by step throughout these Mishnayos. The Mishnayos here in the third paragraph are going to be basically taking us up to where he's going to be confronting the two goats. And then the fourth paragraph we're going to pick up with the two goats. So here in the Mishnah, before we get to the goats, so we're dealing with the par of the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol is going to be bringing a par, doing vidu on the par. Actually, vidu of the par is going to be done twice. We're going to be learning here in this Mishnah the first of the two viduyim that he does over the par. The par is a karban chatas. It's going to be providing a kapara for the Kohen, for his immediate family, and then for all the Kohanim in total. So the Mishnah begins, Ba lo etzel paro. So he's going to approach his par. Uparo haya, omeid ben ulam ala mizbeach. Now geographically, the par is going to be between the ulam, that is the foyer of the heichal, and the mizbeach. Rosh ha'adam in front of the marav. His head is going to be to the south, and meanwhile he's going to be facing to the west. The contortion of the animal is going to be described in much greater detail in the Gemara, so we're going to wait for a little bit in order to understand precisely how the animal is going to be configured and contorted. The Hakohen Omed B'Mizrach, the Kohen is going to be in the east, meaning standing east of the animal, front of the Marav, facing the west. Then the Kohen Gadol is going to be placing his two hands on the head of the animal in order to do vidu. And this is what he would say. Ana Hashem, avisi pashati chatach lefanecha, ani uveisi. So he basically beseeches HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he says that I sinned. In the Gemara, over the course of this daf, we're going to give a much better description of what exactly these three terms mean, and why specifically in this order, and we're also going to see that this is subject to a machlokus. All that is coming up. And clearly this vidu is for his immediate family. He says, Ani uveisi, ana Hashem kaperna lavonus u lepishayim u lechataim she'avisu shepasach shati v'shechatas lefanecha. And here in the vidu he's asking for mechila, Ani uveisi kakasu besoros moshe abdecha, ki v'yamazei yechaper v'chulei. And the Mishnah assumes that we know the rest of the pasuk. Now, in the conclusion of this pasuk, obviously the Kohen Gadol now is going to be saying Shem Hashem in the Azara. The Mishnah then records exactly what the response is. Vehein onin acharav. Everyone there who is listening. So their response is Baruch Shem Kavod Machusol Le'olam Va'ed. So they say Baruch Shem in response to having heard Shem Hashem in the Heichal. Gemara is going to be discussing that also in the upcoming daf. So let's begin. We are starting with the Gemara and Lamed Vavam and Aleph. So a couple of points of consideration over here. First of all, where is the Kohen actually situated? So the Mishnah gives us a pretty good description of where he is. He's Bein Ha'ulam L'Mizbeach. If you happen to have a picture of the Azara in front of you right now, it'll be extremely helpful just to be able to see exactly what we're describing. A picture here is going to be worth 1,000 words. But in the meantime, obviously, I'm going to try to describe. So this is a Karban Chatas. Karban Chatas has to be done in the north, both the Vidui and the Shechita. Rashi writes this in the first Rashi in the Amud Aleph. Shebemakom vidui shachtu. The same place where the vidu is going to be done, that's where the shechita is going to be done as well. Shechita of a chatas has to be done in the north, therefore the vidui also has to be done in the north. That means that the Kohen right now has to be situated in the north. All kachikachim are done in the north, and so chatas here being no different. Being that he is now located between the ulam and the mizbeach, so now we have a pretty good idea of where he is located. He's located on the north side of the Azara, and he's also geographically between the Mizbech and the Ulam. Now, the idea that this qualifies as north, so as we're going to see in just a moment, it's subject to a machlokas. Meaning, we know that Kachi Kachim have to be shechted in the north. What is open for a debate, as we're about to see, is what constitutes the status of being north in the Azara in order to qualify as a sanctioned area to Shecht, Kadshe Kachin. So the Gemara is going to treat us to three opinions on this matter, and the Gemara is going to try to figure out whether or not our Mishnah necessarily follows one of these positions, two of these positions. So, Rabbi Elazar, let's start from the beginning of the Gemara. So who's of the position that this area over here, you're not directly above the Mizbeach, you are to the west of the Mizbeach, and yet it's called Safon. So Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, it is the sheet of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, the Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Ezehu Safon, Mikir Shel Mizbeach Safoni, the Ad Kosel Ha'azara, Ukeneged Kol HaMizbeach Kulo Safon, Div Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda gives us the most limited position of what the north is, and that is anywhere north of the Mizbeach. So as long as you're within the width of the Mizbeach, Mizbeach is 32 amas wide from east to west, and anywhere from the Mizbeach headed northbound, so up all the way up into the northern wall, that constitutes north according to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. Second opinion, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Moshe Fav ben Ulam Lemizbeach, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, goes anywhere westbound from the Mizbeach all the way to the eastern wall of the Heichal. Again, if you have a picture, you'll see it, it's much clearer. And Rabbi Moshe Fav Makom Drisas Ragle Kohanim. The Af Makom Drisas Ragle Yisrael. Rebbe's going to include any area where it is north, east of the Mizbeach, all the way to the eastern side of the Azara. And that means to say that Rebbe obviously already incorporates the area just above the Mizbeach. Seemingly, Rebbe also agrees to the most western area. He's going to add the eastern area as well, the northeastern side of the Azara as well. Avamina Khalifos Vlifnim Akomodim Shepasol. However, if you are anywhere between the northern wall of the Ulam and the northern wall of the Azara, again, see a picture for a good description of where this area is. So that is not going to be considered the north of the Azara according to any of these opinions. It's called over here the area of the Khalifos. Rashi points out that there are windows that are stationed within the northern wall of the Ulam, and all the Mishmaros are storing their knives in that area. Anyway, what comes out from all this is that our Mishnah over here, where it has the Kohen now on the west side of the Mizbeach, so who is it subscribing to? So let me Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, below Rebbe. Well, for sure we know it cannot be going like the Sheet, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda has only one qualified area for Kachim to be Shechted, Kachim to be Shechted, that's north of the Mizbeach. We are not north of the Mizbeach, we are west of the Mizbeach. So certainly our Mishnah is not going like the Sheet, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. That part is clear. What the Gemara would like to suggest is that our Mishnah is going like the Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, and not like the Shita Rebbe. To which the Gemara says, not necessarily, Afilu Tema Rebbe. No, it could very well be that our Mishnah subscribes to Rebbe Shita. The Rebbe Hasha, the Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda, Mosif, the Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, La Mosif. Now, as far as Rebbe's concerned, so he's adding to Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda, but he's also adding to Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon. Meaning, as we already pointed out, the Gemara is just spelling it out, Rebbe sanctions the areas that are directly north of the Mizbech, anywhere west of the Mizbech, and anywhere east of the Mizbech as well. Rebbe has all those areas that are sanctioned as qualified areas where you can shecht kachet kachem. And to which the Gemara says, ani hachi kamrinan. So let's clarify now what we mean. I Rebbe hi nukmei b'kula azara. If our mission is going like the Sheet of Rebbe, so why are we having the Kohen Gadol limited to the area that is west of the Mizbech? Why not have the Kohen Gadol have basically be anywhere in the Azara? When I say anywhere, obviously I mean it still has to be north, but it could be north, directly north of the Mizbeach, it could be northeast, it could be northwest. Why is the Mishnah so limiting? So Elamai, Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, so the Gemara says, okay, so let's say now that our Mishnah is going like Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, Venukme Bein Mizbeach Ulekosel. So then why not just go in the area directly above the Mizbeach? Meaning even if our Mishnah is going like Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, so it's true that he sanctions the northwest area, but he also sanctions, obviously, the area north of the Mizbech. Why not put the Kohen over there? So the Gemara says is that for Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, there has to be another consideration. Notably, we don't want the Kohen Gadol to walk around as much. In other words, we would like to conserve the number of steps that the Kohen Gadol takes. It is now Yom Kippur. He has been staying up all night. He will be doing all the Avodah. So considering the amount of work that he has to do, so therefore, it's fair to say that any time that we can conserve steps for the Kohen Gadol, we'll do so. That's why, according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, the Kohen Gadol could be north of the Mizbeach, but it's just easier for him to be situated in the northwest. So the Rebbe Nami, Mishum Choshe de Kohen Gadol. So therefore, now we could say that our mission is going like the Shita of Rebbe. Rebbe could have the Kohen Gadol in the East. Sure, he could have the Kohen Gadol in the East. But because of Choshe de Kohen Gadol, because of the consideration of trying to minimize the amount of steps taken by the Kohen Gadol, so therefore we're going to put him on the west-hand side. Good. So what comes out now from where the Kohen Gadol is situated is that the author of our Mishnah over here could be the Shita of Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon. It could be the Shita of Rebbe. We know for sure it's not the Shita of Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda, but that's it. That's the only thing that we could say conclusively. Rosh HaLadamra Ufanav Lamar V'Hechem Ishkachala. The Gemara now wants to understand how exactly this animal is facing both to the south and to the west as well. That seems to be impossible. So Amar Rav, V'Okem Es Rosha. So Rav says what's happening over here is the animal is being contorted, meaning that the animal basically is being placed on a north-south trajectory. The rear of the animal is facing north, the head of the animal is facing south. And then what we're doing is that we're taking the head of the animal, turning it 90 degrees, if you're following me well. We are moving the head 90 degrees to the right, which means that the head of the animal is going to be facing west. That is now both the configuration and the contortion of the animal, and that explains the Mishnah. So Gemara says, "Venuk melahedja." Now, obviously, what we want over here is that we want the animal to be facing west, meaning we want the animal in the direction of the heichal. So that's fine. So why don't we just simply have the whole animal lined up east-west? Why do we have the animal lined up north-south, only to then turn to head to the west? If we want the head west, we'll just have the whole animal go in a east-west trajectory. So Amar Abayi, Xerushem Ayarbitz Galalim. So Abayi says, well, the concern is that if the animal's rear is facing the Mizbech, meaning if the animal was east-west, so that means that its rear would be facing the Mizbech, and it's very possible that it will defecate in the direction of the Mizbech, and it's not covered of the Mizbech in order for that to happen. In order to prevent such a Ganai, so therefore we're going to have the animal now in a north-south trajectory, so that if in the event that it defecates, it'll not defecate directly in the direction of the Mizbech. Tanur Rabbanim, the Gemara continues, Ketzah Somech. Rashi points out over here, this question of Ketzah Somech, how do we do smicha, is not just limited to Yom Kippur, it's basically, how do we do smicha by any of the Kodshei Kadoshim? So Ketzah Somech, HaZevach HaMei B'Safon, Ufanav L'Marav. So the Zevach, the carbon, is going to be in the north, meaning obviously it's Kodshei Kadoshim, so it has to be on the northern side of the Azara. And it is going to be facing to the west, meaning in the direction of the Heichal, VeHaSomech HaMei B'Mizrach. The one doing the smicha is going to be to the east of the animal, so that means to say that the somech is going to be directly behind the animal, placing his hands on the head of the animal. Ufanav lamarav, the head of the animal and the head of the somech are going to be facing west. Umeniach shtei yadav bein shtei kanosh mizbeach, his hands are going to be situated between the two horns of the carbon. Uvavash lo yehi davar chotzitz beino levein hazevach. There can be no chatzitza, there has to be direct contact between your hands and the head of the animal. Umisvadeh. You do vidui, you make a confession, achatos of anchatos, if it's a carbon chatos that you're bringing, so obviously the vidui is going to be over whatever required you to bring a carbon chatos. Al asham of an asham, same thing with the carbon asham, but al ola of an leket shechol peo, meiser ani. Let's take out the meiser ani, as per the direction of the Bach. So, and for a carbon ola, so it is providing kapara specifically for the sin of leket shechcha and peo. Those are agricultural halachas of matanos la'aniyim, gifts given to the poor people. Divrei Rabbi Yosi Aglili, that is the sheet of Rabbi Yosi Aglili, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Ein ola ba ela al aseva alos ase sheni tektase. Rabbi Kiva says that an ola comes, but an ola comes for failure of complying with a mitzvah sase, positive commandment, meaning you just simply fail to do a mitzvah sase, or a lo sasesh nitak lase, or it's a lav, but a lav nitak lase. Let's say you steal. The Torah says that there is no punishment for stealing. There's no corporal punishment for stealing, since there's a way to rectify that which you did, and that is veheshiv zegzela, returning the item that you stole. This is what's called a lav hanitak lase. And so therefore, there's not going to be makos. Effectively, what Rabbi Kiva is saying is that if I have an ase that has no onish to it whatsoever, no ases have onish to it, there is a notable exception of the mitzvah of Mila and carbon Pesach, where there is karis that comes along with failure to do these mitzvahs. But in terms of corporal punishment, there is no corporal punishment that is provided for any failure to do a mitzvah sasei. And a lavani taklasei, also, there is not going to be a punishment for lavani taklasei, since the Torah gives us a remedy of how you could resolve the fact that you violated the law, so therefore there's not going to be a corporal punishment. For these averos, so there is, according to Rabbi Akiva, an opportunity to do tshuva. Notably, you'll bring a carbon ola, and you'll do vidui over the carbon ola. Okay. So in the brisa over here, so it's pretty much what we would expect in terms of vidui, very similar to Yom Kippur, in terms of the configuration of the animal, in terms of vidui. It's just that this brisa over here is dealing with the vidui as you would articulate over a chatas, over an asham, and over the carbon ola. Now for the chatas and the asham, as to be expected, chatas, failure to, not failure, but a violation of an avera that if done intentionally would be subject to kares. So you go through the beginning of Masechta Krisus, and the Torah goes through 34 such examples of those averas which, if you did b'shogeg, you'd be chayv a karban chatas. Fine. So it's a finite number, and it's also very clear. Karban asham, also outlined in detail in the Torah when a person is chayv to bring a karban asham. Once again, the Mishnayos in Krisus goes over that as well. As far as the carbon ola is concerned, so what we're seeing here in this daf, Yuma daf Lamed Vav, is a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Akiva in terms of exactly when a person would be chayiv to bring a carbon ola as a kapara. So according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, it's going to be limited to failure to take off lekeshechan peya, and according to Rabbi Akiva, it's a violation of any mitzvah sase, a failure of any, of complying with any mitzvah sase, or a lo sase, any takla sase. So obviously over here, what Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Akiva are doing are arguing, but what exactly is the nekuda machlokes between the two of them, and the Gemara tries to uncover. So b'mai kamiflegi. So what is this machlokes between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva? So the Gemara is going to give two approaches of how to understand the machlokes. So I'm Rabbi Yirmiyah, as we now turn to the Amud Beis, belav de nevela kamiflegi. So they're having a debate regarding the lav of nevela. Rabbi Kiva sever lav ma'al yehu. According to Rabbi Kiva, it's going to be considered a bona fide lav. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili sever lav ma'al yehu. And according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, it's not a bona fide lav. Now this obviously requires an explanation. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes over here, belav nevela kamiflegi dechsiv asei acharav. Now if you look carefully in the Torah, where the Torah describes the iser of nevela, so to a certain degree, now this part's going to be a little bit subtle, to a certain degree, the nevela is a lav with an assay incorporated with it. Again, let's say this clearly, and let's say this a little bit slowly. Rashi notes over here, let's go through the Rashi. If you happen to have a nevela, meaning you have an animal that you didn't give a proper shechita, it died without the benefit of a shechita, so the Torah says that you give it to a ger. A ger over here does not mean a full convert. A ger over here means a ger toshav. So, either give it to a ger or you sell it to a guy. The umiu, and Rashi continues, al karchach ein ze nitak lase. Now this is not a lav of nitak lase, as Rashi points out over here. This is an obvious point, but it needs clarification. Daha, nisina sal ger, yev shal acha sha'avar alo sase shel achila. The law of nevela is don't eat nevela. Now, if you violate the law of don't eat, of not eating nevela, so that means that you ate the nevela, which means that the nevela is no longer in existence. There is no way now that you can give it to a ger. So, va'akarchach asei mi'ikara mashma, which means to say that that asei has nothing to do with the law. So, lo tochlenikol nevela, ela ger teneno, velo sochluva. Clearly, that means to say that according to Rabbi Akiva, the assay and the los assay that's involved with nevela are two totally distinct and different isurim mitzvahs of the Torah. The Torah's construction, the Torah's commandment to give it to a ger, is totally detached, it's totally removed from the isur of not eating a nevela. Good. And that means to say that according to Rabbi Kiva, when looking at nevela, it is just simply a classic lav. In fact, that's exactly what the Gemara means. That according to Rabbi Akiva, lav ma'al yehu. We just look at it as a classic lav. Good. That's the shita of Rabbi Akiva. Which means, obviously, then, that with a violation of the lav of eating nevela, is going to come with it a corporal punishment, notably makos. That part is unbelievably straightforward. Now we get to the part of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and this, admittedly, is going to get a little bit more complicated. Rashi over here writes, as far as Rav Yossi Aglili, we're going to skip one more Rashi. Rav Yossi Aglili sever, lav de nevela afagav dal karcha chasei de basrei mi ikara mashma. Now, Rav Yossi Aglili agrees that the Lav and the Asay associated with Nevela are cannot be viewed as one continuum. Can't be. Again, we're going to just reiterate the same point. If you ate the Nevela, there is no way that you can go ahead now and give it to the Ger or sell it to the Nachri. So obviously, when the Torah says give it to the Ger or sell it to the Nachri, it obviously means prior to you eating it. And Hoa Ubasrei Delavksiv Ein Lokin Alav. But what Rav Yirmiyah is proposing is that according to Rav Yossi Aglili, for somebody eating Nevela, it is not going to be subject to Malkus. Delo Dami Delav Dechasima. Rashi writes because it doesn't follow the prototype lav of chasima. The Torah says, Losach Sum Shur Bedisha, one is not allowed to muzzle an animal while it is threshing. There is no remedy to the situation, meaning it is just a standalone lav. Uva alav ola, valav delekit shechal per nami, afil armin and dasei de basre mikaruhu mashma lo laki alaha. That last part of Rashi, I'm going to explain in just a moment, but the basic idea over here is that the lav of Nevela, according to Rav Yossi Aglili, is not a standard lav. A standard lav is a lav that's a standalone lav, like lo sachsum shur bedisha. Over here, the lav of Nevela, even though he admits, once you violate the lav, there's no way to rectify and remedy it, but by virtue of the fact that there is an attachment between a lav and an assay, even though the assay is not a lav and he talked about assay, but still, that attachment is enough to make it a dissimilar lav, a somewhat unusual lav, one that's not going to be eligible to Malkus. And now if it's not eligible to Malkus, so then how do you get kapara for it? The answer is that you bring carbonola and you do vidui over it. And what Rav Yirmiyah is saying now is that this explanation that we're giving within Rav Yossi Aglili is now going to inform us regarding the Rav Yossi Aglili regarding Lekach Shecha and Peah. Lekach Shecha and Peah operate with the same basic premise in that there is a lav and there is also an assay. Now the assay obviously is to give it to the aniyim. The lav is don't take it for yourself. Now, if you take it for yourself, and by taking it for yourself, we mean taking it and eating it for yourself, obviously there's no chance that you can remedy it. But nevertheless, since the Torah couples together the lav and the assay, so what the Gemara now is suggesting is that it now is no longer a standard lav. It's no longer a lav that you're going to get malchus for. And therefore, there's no eligibility for malchus. So how do you receive kapara for it? If in fact you want to be mechaper, the answer is carbon ola. So now what Rav Yirmiyah is introducing to us is that the way you're going to look at Nevela is going to inform us in terms of how to look at Lekach Shecha and Peah. According to Rabbi Akiva, we're looking at Nevela as if it's a standard lav, and therefore it's subject to Malkus. And Lekach Shecha and Peah are going to be the same thing. It's a standard lav, which is going to be subject to Malkus. And therefore, obviously, there's no means to receive a kapara through a carbonola. Masha Enkin, according to Rav Yossi Aglili, it is not a standard lav. Why? Because it has an assay attached to it. And even though the assay that's attached to it is not the kind of assay that can remedy the lav, but nevertheless, the attachment to an assay makes it now no longer a standard lav, no longer eligible to Malkus, and that's why now the way to achieve kapara is only going to be through the offering of a carbon ola with vidui on that particular avera. Good. That is all one way to present it. Let's just read it in the Gemara. I focus a lot on Rashi. So, Belav de Nevela Kamiflagi, I'm just going to start again from the top of the Amud. Rabbi Kiva, Sever Lav Malyu. It's according to Rabbi Kiva, it is a bona fide Lav. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Sever Lav, Lav Malyu. It's not a bona fide Lav. Good. So that's the Rav Yirmiyah's explanation. Abaye Amar, along comes Abaye and says, no, Dekuli Amar Lav de Nevela Lav Malyu. So Abaye says, no, I fundamentally disagree. I think that the Lav de Nevela, according to both Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili, is qualifies as a standard lav. If one were to violate it intentionally, one would be eligible for Malkus. And there's nothing to discuss regarding a Nevela. So if that's true, so then what's the machlokus over here between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili regarding Lekach Shecha and Peah? V'hacha b'sa'azov kamiflagi. They're arguing regarding the mitzvah of Ta'azov, to leave Lekach Shecha and Peah over for the anim. Rabbi Kiva Sabatazov Mikara Mashma. Rabbi Kiva says that's the instruction of the Torah from the point of origination, meaning that once you have an opportunity to leave over Lekach Shecha and Peah for the aniyim, so you must do so. Meaning, even though the Torah provides its instructions after telling you not to take it for yourself, but the understanding for Rabbi Kiva is that this is something that you should have done from the very beginning, from the point of origin. And Rav Yosi Glili Safar Hashta Mashma. And Rav Yosi Glili says, no, the Tazar Vasam is talking about after you take it for yourself. Meaning after you take it for yourself, the Torah says you shouldn't have done that. And now what you know what you could do to remedy the situation, so you can give it to the Aniyim. So they understand the Tazov is after you violate the Yisr, which means that, according to Rav Yosi Glili, it is a Lav Hanitak Laseh. So in other words, the Machlokas, as Abai explains, between Rav Yosi Glili and Rabbi Akiva, is limited only to Lekit Shechachan Peah, in terms of whether the Tazov is for the point of origin, that's Rabbi Akiva, or it is there to tell me what to do in the event that you violate the Yisr, of not to take the Lekit Shechachan Peah for yourself. Meaning it's a Lav Hanitak Laseh. Lamed Vav Amud Bey is about 6 lines to the top of the Amud. One more topic for the Daf, Tan Rabbanan. Ketzad Mizvada. So how do you do Vidui? Avisi Pashat V'chatasi V'chem B'sir Mishalech Omer V'zvada Lav V'zkol Avonos B'nei Yisrov V'zkol P'shehem L'chol Chatasam V'chem B'moshe Omer Nosei Avon B'fesha V'chata Divrei Meir. So Rav Meir Shita is that the order in which a person makes Vidui on Yom Kippur is by starting off with the Avon, then Pesha, and then Chet. This is the order as according to the Shita Rav Meir that's recorded here in this Braisa. It happens to be that that's the same order that's recorded in our Mishnah. Meaning our Mishnah is following the Shita of Rabbi Meir. V'chachamim omrim avonos elu aznonos. V'cheinu omer hi kares tikares hanefesh ahi avon haba. So the word avon is referring to someone who sins intentionally. Pishayim elu hamiradim. And as far as the word Pesha is concerned, that's a reference to Mered, a rebellion, also intentional. V'cheinu omer melech moav pashabi. V'omer asti fashel levana ba'isahi l'chol chatos, ba'isahi. So there are two psukim in Tanakh that describe Pesha as being a rebellion. And l'chol chatosam elosh gagos. And chet is a reference to shogeg, something which is unintentional and inadvertent. V'cheinu omer nefesh ki secheta b'shgaga. Okay, ume achrish yizvad al zonos val hamarad mchozer mezvad al shkagos. And so now that we've given definition for what is an avon, and what is a pesha, and what is a chait, so then of course it makes no sense that a person is asking for kapara for the intentional, and only afterwards getting kapara for unintentional. You would think that when asking for forgiveness, one would first start off by asking on those that are easier to forgive, otherwise known as the unintentional, and then only afterwards asking for forgiveness on the intentional. So alakach haya mizvada. So therefore the Chachamim say, here's what you should do. Chatasi ve'avisi upashak lefanecha niuvesi v'chule v'chem b'david omer. So the order should be now chet avon pesha. And in fact, the Chachamim say, look, we have precedent in Tanakh. First we'll start with a pasuk in Tehillim, chatanu im avasinu ha'avinu hirshanu. So we have first chet followed then by avon and rasha. And we also have a pasuk as it relates to Shlomo HaMelech. V'chein b'Daniel ha'omer chatanu ve'evinu v'hirshanu umarano. So elamau shamar Moshe nosei avon pesha v'chata. So therefore, it only begs the question. So we have a number of psukim in Tanakh, Tehillim, Malachim, Daniel, where the order is we start with chet and then we move on to avon and pesha. So then, how do you understand the psukim in Chumash, where the psukim in Chumash seem to be a strong proof for Rabbi Meir, as we saw a pasuk both in Achrei Mos and in Parshas Kisisa, where we start with Avon Pesha and then only Chet. So Amar Moshe Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is how the Chachamim understand those psukim by the Torah. Moshe says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Shel Olam B'Shas Sheyisroch Chot In Lefanecha Va'usin Tshuva Aseh Lahem Zdonos Kishkagos. So when the Jewish people are doing tshuva, so here's what we're going to ask from you, and that is that for the purposes of sentencing, can you downgrade intentionality? Meaning that even though the Jewish people were mazid, could you turn the mazid into a shogeg? So can you make avon and pesha like a chet? That's pshat in the psukim. Happens to be that we're going to be seeing later in the Masechta, in the 8th Perek, a discussion to be had in terms of how to downgrade sentencing. Basically, how to take a guilty verdict and downgrade it to something less of guilty. And the Gemara later on is going to make distinctions between a person doing tshuva me'ahava versus tshuva me'ira. Okay, we're going to see it at the end of the Masechta. But meanwhile, just to make us somewhat aware right now that sometimes the and for tshuva specifically tshuva me'ava, So you can have an avera downgraded, not only just in terms of intentionality, but you can have it expunged totally. Okay, a point that we're going to discuss in much greater detail, the end of the Masechta and the eighth parak, just noting right now that the only thing that we're doing over here is just turning it from a mazid into a shogeg. Anyway, what comes out from this entire discussion now is that there is a basic machlokus in terms of what should be the formula for vidui. Meaning our Mishnah has a very clear formula of avisi, pashasi, v'chatasi, but we just learned together that this is subject to a machlokus between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, and notably our Mishnah falls like the Shita of Rav Meir, but meanwhile the Chachamim disagree, and it is principled on the fact that according to the Chachamim, it simply doesn't make sense that you're going to first ask for forgiveness on the mazid, and then only afterwards you're going to ask for forgiveness on the shogeg. The Gemara ends this discussion with the following episode, Amar Rabba Bar Shmuel, Amar Rav Halachi Kedevei Chachamim. So first the Gemara quotes in the name of Shmuel, in the name of Rabba Halacha Falzak the Chachamim, Pshita Yachav Rabba Malacha Gerabim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but isn't that obvious? To which the Gemara says, not necessarily, I might have thought Mistabra Taimed the Rameir. Dikamasai Lekra. No, maybe Rameir is a stronger position, even though he's a Das Yachid, but he is supported by the Psuk in both the Nachrimos and Parshas Kisisa. And so I might have thought that if those Psukim would tilt in favor of Rabbi Meir, and despite the fact that he is a Shitas Yachid, a Das Yachid, but nevertheless goes against the Rambam, but nevertheless you have Psukim that support his viewpoint. So that's the Havamin, and the Chiddush now is that no, we follow the Chachamim. And an episode. Hahu denachis kamei de Rabba. So there was a shliach tzibur who was davening for the Amun in front of Rabba. Obviously, Rabba in Amora, well after the tkufa of the Beis Hamikdash. And so basically, the shliach tzibur sang the nusach of Yom Kippur. And in Musaf, he is adding now the avoda of Yom Kippur. Rashi notes over here that it is critical to go over the nusach of the avoda. Rashi did Ramaschah how denachis. So he writes to shlich tzibur shemesadu b'tzilasos yom kippurim seder avoda sav shokohen gadol. So we go over the seder avoda again. Of course, that's what we do during Musaf. Al shem uneshama parim sfaseinu, based on the pasuk in Hosea. That in the absence of having karbanos, but at least we could say over the karbanos, and that will be right now the only way to replace not having the actual avoda itself. Fine. So that's the shliach tzibur and the avakar Rabbi Meir. And as the story goes, now he follows the sheet of Rabbi Meir, meaning that when he's saying over the vidui of the Kohen Gadol during the nusach and Yom Kippur, so he says it over like Rabbi Meir. Right? He starts off with avon apesha, and then he says chet. So Rabbi looks at the Shliach Tzibur and he says, I really don't understand. Meaning you're following the Sheet of Rav Meir, but meanwhile the Chachamim argue with Rav Meir. And how could you not follow the Sheet of the Chachamim? So Amalek Rav Meir is fearly, kedichsib, besefer, raisa de Moshe. So the Shliach Tzibur seems to have a very strong response, and that is, look, I'm just following the Pesukim and the Chumash, right? Like Rav Meir himself records, meaning the Pesuk in Achrimos, the Pesuk in Parshas Kisisa, where Avon and Pesha comes first, then Chet, and all I'm doing is just following the Pesukim. Okay. We'll stop over here. It's an awkward conclusion to the discussion. Rabba does not have a counter-argument to that of the Shliach Tzibur. As you can imagine, the Rishonim debate in exactly which position should we follow in terms of how we say over the Vidui. There's Machlokes Tanayim, and despite the fact that the Gemara is very clearly ruled like the Chachamim, but meanwhile, the story at the end certainly leaves us off a little bit confused. Okay, and the Rishonim do in fact debate this very issue. Okay, let's quickly recap our daf. The Mishnah we started off with here in Yuma Daf Lamed Vav takes us through the Kohen Gadol approaching his par in order to do the first of two viduim over specifically the par, and the vidu is going to be for the Kohen Gadol and for his immediate family. The Mishnah records how he stands, how the animal stands, and the nusach of the vidui, and specifically where he and the animal are going to be situated. The Gemara's discussion on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph is broken down to basically four different topics. Number one, what area is considered safon for kachei kadashim? the power of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is a Karban Chatzos, therefore it's a Kachi Kashim, therefore it has to be shechted in the north. The Vidui is done in the same place in which you shechted, so therefore the Vidui has to be done in the north. Since the Mishnah has our Kohen Gadol in the northwest section, so clearly our Mishnah is subscribing to the idea that the northwest is considered north for the purposes of shechting Kachi Kadashim. So who does that position subscribe to? So the Gemara taught us that there were three opinions in this matter of what Safon, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi, what we could say definitively is our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, but leaves open the possibility that our Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, or could even be going like Rabbi. The fact that the Kohen Gadol is in the northwest is just simply because of Chulshah the Kohen Gadol, simply because we want to try to minimize the amount of steps the Kohen Gadol takes. That is topic number one. Topic number two, Gemara discusses very briefly, is how to understand the configuration of the animal. The animal is facing south, but meanwhile facing west. So how does that work? So the body of the animal is basically northbound, head southbound, but then the head is going to be turned 9 degrees so that the head faces the west. Why contort the animal in that fashion? Because really we want the animal facing west, but we don't want the end of the animal, the rear of the animal facing the Mizbeach. If in the event that the animal defecates and it defecates in the direction of the Mizbeach, that would be extraordinarily inappropriate. So that's why we go about contorting the animal in that manner. The Gemara then, Alamed Vav, Amid Aleph, this is going to be our third topic of the daf, brings down a discussion regarding how exactly do you do vidui. And the Gemara starts off by saying for a chatas, it's going to be a vidui for standard chatas, and for asham, it's going to be a vidui for standard asham. But where it becomes unique, where it becomes subject to debate is regarding a carbon ola, where it does provide some kapara, and what exactly, which averus is it providing a kapara for? So, the machlok is between Rabbi Yosef Aglili and Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Yosef Aglili says it's for lekeshech hanpeya, and Rabbi Kiva says it's for any essay and for any lava nitak lasei, meaning any avera where there's not going to be an onus and not going to be a punishment. And so therefore the carbon ola is there to provide that kapara. Otherwise, the onus itself would be providing that kapara. What exactly is the machlokes between Rav Yosef Aglili and Rabbi Kiva? So the Gemara, as we are turn to the top of the Amud Beis for the review, the Gemara records two ways to understand it. Either Rav Yirmiya, they're arguing about the nature of the isser of Lakit Shechan Peya in terms of maybe it's a somewhat more unusual lav, kind of like Nevela is an unusual lav because it's a lav and it's an assay. It's not a lav and a takla assay, but it's a lav and assay that are attached one to another. And so maybe that downgrades it to a somewhat reduced type of lav. This is Rav Yirmiya's suggestion. Abaye flatly rejects this idea. Abaye says that Nevela is a bona fide lav. And over here, the machlok between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yosef Aglili is just a question of how to understand the mitzvah's essay of Tazov as it relates to Leket Shechan Peah. Is that mitzvah's essay there, even though presented after the Torah warns us not to take it for yourself? But is it there really mi'ikara, that shita's Rabbi Kiva? Or no, maybe it really is a lav nitak la'aseh, that shita's Rabbi Yosef Aglili. Good. Continuing in the review, the last thing that we discussed today is what is going to be the correct order of the vidui of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Is the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur going to start off by mentioning Avon, Pesha, and then Chatas, and then Chatei, which is really the girsa of our Mishnah, the Nusach of our Mishnah, which as we come to learn is really the Shita of our Meir, or are we going to start off with Chet and then Avon and Pesha, which is the Shita of the Chachamim? The Gemara goes over the various Psukim throughout Chumash and Navi, each one pointing into a different direction. The Gemara also went over the Svara of the Chachamim, that really, of course, you should be saying over Chet, because Chet is for the unintentional, Avon and Pesha is for the intentional, and we should be asking for Kapara for the unintentional first, which is a smaller ask, and then only afterwards asking for the more serious crimes. And the Gemara ends off with a story where a Shlech Sibor davening for the Amud in front of Rabbah, so during the Avoda of Yom Kippur, he says over the Nusach like Rabbi Meir, and Rabbah was upset, but the Sheikh Sibor had an answer for Rabbah. And this is where we'll conclude.